Welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, registered veterinary technician, Becky Mosser. We're very lucky and excited for today's conversation to be sponsored by Claro and to have our guest, Ms. Heather Prendergast, with us today. She is one of the leading technicians in the industry. Her extensive background and education in veterinary practice management, as well as human resources, makes her one of the leading experts in office practices, office management, and just honestly, personal interactions. So we're very lucky and very excited to have her join us today for a conversation about empathy and, you know, where we're at in practicing. So thank you so much for joining us and welcome, Ms. Heather.
Thank you so much, Ms. Becky. I always enjoy my time with you.
Well, I'm lucky to have this time with you today because it feels like forever since I've seen you in this whole no travel life that we have. So for anybody that doesn't know Miss Heather, she is a brilliant lady. She is out in New Mexico and she has her certified veterinary practice manager. She's also a senior professional in human resources. Do I have that right?
That is correct.
And that is an additional credential you not so recent. It feels recently, but it's probably been a couple years now that you earned. I remember when you got this credential, it was a lot of work. What made you sort of incorporate that into your management and consulting life?
You know, it's been about 4 years since I've had it. It still feels like just yesterday, but I've always been a lifelong learner where I need to challenge myself to keep me excited and keep me motivated, but I also need more skills to bring back to the practices that I lead and practices I consult with. And human resources ties into what we do because it's about the people and it's the culture, it's the leadership, it is employee engagement. And if we don't have loyal, engaged employees, then it makes our jobs that much harder. So HR was just such a natural fit after I completed my CVPM. And gosh, I tell you, I've benefited from it so much. And I really enjoy the great things that I am able to implement with it.
Well, it is part of what made us think you would be the perfect person to have this conversation today when we started to talk about empathy, because it is sort of, I feel like, a very important completed circle that you have. Because first of all, you're a registered veterinary technician, so you have the medical background. You're a certified veterinary practice manager, so you have the practice and the business aspect. But then by going above and beyond and really learning about the HR aspect and how to treat the people, the humans, because that for us is often very secondary.
It is very secondary. And by nature, the veterinary industry is we are definitely more introverts. We take care of ourselves. And you've got to have somebody that is maybe a bit more extroverted than our norm, that is willing to grow and build people and see their best potentials and figuring out how to find the purpose in every individual. Because when everybody knows and believes in what they are doing in our veterinary hospitals, we create such an exceptional team. But you have to have somebody leading that. And a lot of that comes from the HR side.
Yeah. Oh, I think oftentimes all of it needs to. And unfortunately, I know a lot of clinics don't have an HR side at all.
Right. And gosh, everything we do, everything ties back to the people of our hospital.
So we put that on our practice managers. And so if you're a practice manager and you don't have background in human resources, I think you really should take a page out of Ms. Heather's book and look at how you can expand your people knowledge, because empathy in the veterinary clinic is something I feel like we're good at, right? Like we are teeming with empathy for our patients. And it's so funny. You see these like people who always say like, I'm weird. Like if you cry in front of me, I don't really know how to comfort you. I'm kind of like, oh, you know, like, oh. But if it's like a patient, you know, we're going to tuck it in our shirt and we're going to take it home and we're going to stay up all night. So I think we have a ton of empathy, but I think sometimes we don't bring that approach to our clients with the empathy. It really all goes toward our patients. And I don't know what creates that for us.
I agree with you 200%, Becky. The empathy that we have towards our clients, it's challenged, to say it simply. We often think in our introverted world, we put workflows in place in our hospitals because it's better for us, the team. We don't often put ourselves in the shoes of a client. What is the client experiencing? What is their customer service like? What is the communication for them? This is all an unknown world. It is stressful. These babies are now a part of their family. It's not just a dog or just a cat. It's their family. It's their child. And therefore, the empathy portion of our communication has got to take several steps up. I mean, we've got to move forward with this empathy piece. And it's really hard for us to step out of a clinician's role and move into a client role. So I have always encouraged, even when we were in our normal practices of bringing clients into the hospital in the exam rooms, and we as team members, we need to go sit in the lobby and look at the lobby from the client's eyes. What do they see? What do they smell? What do they hear? And put that, do the same thing in the exam room. It's the same thing with the euthanasia experience. What do they see? What do they hear? What do they smell during their heightened sense of emotion? We don't do that. And now that we are doing these new normal things of curbside service, and we have to step up the communication customer service, we still only often think about us in the team. We never put ourselves in the shoes of the client, and therefore we're losing that empathy piece with those clients. It's, to me, it's even worse today than it was pre-COVID.
Yeah. And you know, it doesn't make anybody a bad guy, right? Like it's easy. Like you're like, look, I run out of worry. I'm worrying about my team. I'm worrying about myself. I worry about my patients. It's hard to have that owner empathy, right? It's hard to start to think about the client experience. But I think it's important for patient outcomes. And I think people sometimes underestimate how the owner empathy and the owner relationship is directly related to patient outcome.
That is absolutely the nail on the head, Becky. If we don't have empathy for clients, if we don't identify what their concerns are or what their challenges are, the patient may not get the best care possible. We can talk about that with treatments, treatment plans, medications that we are going to dispense. Does it meet the needs of the clients? Is it the best for the patient and the client? Because if we don't have client compliance, then the patient's not getting that care. And it all comes back to us, the team members who don't empathize with the clients and identify what those challenges are and understand them.
It's so true. And I consult and lecture, as you know, on working with clients with special needs in our clinics. But I always finish the conversation up with like, this is everybody. This has nothing to do really with special needs. I always recommend moving through your clinic. And I just have to say, if you have not done your lobby since the 90s, if you have bench seating, if your receptionist's desk is up to their eyeballs and your client's chest, please, please, please call Miss Heather and have that redone. Because I see so many of these 1990 lobbies and I think to myself, this isn't comfortable. This is horrible. And you've got time now that you don't have clients in your lobby to remodel. We'll never know.
Absolutely.
So, okay. Empathy and examinations. Now, I guess we have to look at this outside of COVID life, right? Like, because the quote-unquote new normal and how we're going to do this is part of this is it ties in. Some of it's like, we don't know what it's going to look like in the future. But what we know is when we walk into our clinics as a client, the visit in the right now feels like it's stressful. We worry about money. We're worried about our pets. There's a lot going on in our average day for our clients. What should it look like? What does owner empathy in the practice look like?
We need to walk in the shoes of the client. We need to be a client. And this might even be going to another sister hospital or a hospital that you have a good relationship with and just be a client in another practice to get an eye-opening experience. I think that we are jaded by the four walls in our hospital and we often divert into what the normal roles are. But if you go to another hospital, your eyes are completely opened. But we know that whatever our practice looks like, you know, we can take 5 years ago, we can take the COVID life, we can take whatever the unknown is of our future. We know that clients are frustrated. We know that they have fear for their pet. We know that they feel like they lose control when their pets are taken away from them. And because of that sense of unknown, both the pets and the clients live in that fear. Well, that's not the environment that we want to create. When we talk about fear-free environments, when we talk about customer service, or we talk about communication, it is up to us in the hospital to remove all of that. And it all starts with empathy, understanding the client's perspective of what's happening in your hospital.
I think about how often we ask our clients how they feel.
We don't.
How do you feel about this plan? How do you feel about their behavior? How do you feel about these changes? Like, we tell them what to do. We tell them what to expect. We ask them what they're seeing, but we very rarely say, how do you feel about this?
And Becky, don't you think this should be a two-way conversation instead of a one-way where we talk at the client? Shouldn't it be incorporating those thoughts into our treatment recommendations?
I think so much. And again, it ties back to that compliance piece, right? Because if I ask my client, how do you feel about this? And I'm genuine and I have a good relationship and they feel genuine empathy and they say, well, honestly, I'm a little nervous. I've never given my dog an injection, or I'm a little nervous because anytime I try to do anything with my one pet, the other one gets involved. And what happens if my other pet eats his pill accidentally? I think that there are a lot of uncertainties that they would, given the opportunity, express that we could completely address that, again, come back to patient outcomes. So if you're feeling like you don't have time, if you're feeling like you don't have emotional energy, taking these steps is a bridge on the gap of patient care.
I agree. And Becky, this brings me back to my days in practice. The doctors would make a recommendation for a product for a treatment. So let's say it's an antibiotic and the doctors would say, oh, well, let's dispense this medication that you have to give 3 times a day because it's cheaper. But when you go back and you ask the client, and this is where when I left practice, this is what I started doing, is tell me about your daily activities. Are you able to administer Fluffy medication 3 times a day, which equals every 8 hours? Can you give it every 8 hours? Because that's what is directed by the label. And when they really evaluate, no, they talk about have a crazy morning. They got to get the kids off to school. They get home, they pick the kids up. They got to get to soccer practice. Well, in between that was passing 8 hours. So we've missed that second dose. So we give it, maybe 5 o'clock when we get home. And then we give the third dose when we get home from soccer practice, which is less than 8 hours. That's not optimal. And it stresses them out. And really, that always leads to not getting all the medication for the pet. And so when I would ask, what works with your schedule? Giving product 3 times a day because it's cheaper? Or would you like something that you can give once a day? Would that make it easier for you? Oh my gosh, that would make it so much easier. There would be such a sense of relief on their face by just having to administer something once a day. Or by goodness, what if we could just give a product that only took 1 time administration, what that we could even do in the hospital, and then they didn't even have to do anything? They were willing to pay for that. We just don't ever give them that opportunity, Becky. And I think it is so critical for patient outcome that we do that.
Yeah, we talk all the time about don't x-ray the client's wallet. And we have a tendency to, and this is a long-standing problem in veterinary
medicine,
right?
Isn't it?
Yes. I mean, we decide what they're going to afford or not afford, and they are looking to us to get all of the options, right? I mean, what happens when they go home and they're like, okay, yeah, so my cousin's veterinarian gave something that you just put in the ear at the clinic and then I didn't have to do anything? Do you not have this technology? Do you not have this advanced medicine, right? Then we look like we're not on the cutting edge.
Yep, absolutely. Clients are looking for something that is easy. They want to be compliant. They feel extremely guilty when they're not compliant. But when the problem is not fixed because they weren't able to administer all the medication, it still comes back and the team takes it personally that, right, it's the veterinarian's fault that the pet didn't get better. When the client is frustrated, mostly because, well, their pet didn't get better, but they also have that guilt and they take it out on the hospital.
Yeah. Part of empathy is incorporating our clients in the plan.
Absolutely. It's got to be a two-way conversation. Let's do a check every examination, every phone call. How are you feeling about this? Is there any potential hurdles that you see? What can we help you overcome? Let's please identify that. Let's use our empathy skills to identify those hurdles and make it better for the clients.
And I guess I would argue that it's a muscle, right? So the more we practice our owner empathy muscle and work it out, the more naturally it comes to where it isn't an effort to think, oh, let me ask them how they feel about this. It becomes like natural. And I feel like just like we talk about, you know, low stress handling in the clinic, it becomes something we lean into because we see better outcomes.
Absolutely. And, you know, 21 days is what it takes to create a habit.
Yeah.
It just needs to be part of our SOAP format, in my mind, in our medical records.
Yeah. What about though, when it is a lesser than best practice? So I think part of the time we lose empathy and part of the reason we get kind of jaded is because people don't do the best things for their pets. And then we see that and we're like, people bleep, you know, right? Like we regularly just are turned against people because we feel like they're not taking great care of their pet. And I know that there, you see it online, right? Like, if you can't afford to do this, this, and this, you shouldn't have a pet at all. Can you speak a little bit to that about how we run out of empathy with less than the best practices and how we can build our resiliency there?
Becky, I'm going to challenge that just a little bit, because I think when I would dive into why an owner couldn't do something, the reason they couldn't do it is because they didn't understand the need for it. So we talk a lot about financials, and maybe some people can't afford the best care possible. But when you dial in, they still go to Starbucks every day. And so many times the financial topic is blamed when actually they didn't have a full understanding of why the pet needs this particular treatment or why this particular procedure needs to happen. Now, 2 out of 10 owners probably legitimately have that concern where they can't get money. They want to do everything possible. And many of those, even 2 out of 10 that don't have money, figure out a way to make it happen when they have a full understanding of the situation. We just, and the veterinary industry, get frustrated and we stop communicating. We stop providing that customer service because we are jaded, instead of just taking that extra opportunity to create the education around it.
Love that. It makes a lot of sense. And I can think back to emergency room days where I would be like, yeah, it's a really nice watch you could probably pawn. I mean, so I know that I have not been terribly empathetic a lot of times on my own, but you're right. I think if we ask why, if we take an opportunity to be empathetic, to slow down and talk to them.
Absolutely. Identify what those hurdles are and talk through ways. It takes extra minutes. Absolutely, it does. But again, it's about patient outcome. And, it leads to burnout and compassion fatigue when we consistently feel like we have these clients that are against us, are not accepting our recommendations. But that's a self-reflection piece. Let's go back and see how we are talking to those clients. Are we being empathetic? Are we identifying their hurdles, concerns, and objectives? And are we including that? And are we having a two-way conversation? When we self-evaluate, it really changes the dynamics in those hospitals.
Okay. So we've talked so much about client in front of us, client talking to us, being empathetic in that time. But what about when we don't have the client in front of us anymore and we need to do follow-up? What are the best ways to do that? And I guess I'm asking that with the thought of, like, especially if we find out they're not successful in a plan we made together. So you're like, oh, I was empathetic. Oh, I asked them, they promised, and it fell apart.
To me, this is that the client's not in front of us. We need to have a conversation with that client. Video conference is our friend. Let's figure out how we video them. Can we do that through our telehealth app that we're using? Can we use it through maybe a practice app that we have? What can we do to see them face to face? Having a conversation over the telephone yields the least amount of connection. But if we can see faces and we can understand what they are going through by watching their facial expressions, we can address their concerns. We can tell when somebody is uncomfortable with a topic or when they don't understand something by watching their facial reactions. We can't gather that over the telephone. So when we have somebody that didn't follow through in a plan, that is my first go-to, is let's get on a video conference so I can see your nonverbal communication and communicate better. I will always be the person that if we had a communication failure or if we had a treatment failure, I'm going to do a self-evaluation myself and identify where maybe I failed at. We may have some exceptional people that, yes, there's going to be the occasional failures we have with our clients, but more times than not, it is us in the veterinary hospital that is super stressed. We have patient overload. We are running in 30 different directions, and we fail to use empathy when communicating with those clients.
So, okay. I guess it kind of, first of all, I'm behind you on all of this, but then I start to think about devil's advocate. What about when we don't feel like we're getting empathy from the client? What about when we feel like the client's not empathetic to the animal?
I think that can be a difficult situation. I would still go back and ask the why behind it. There's always a reason that we jade to what our own personal thoughts are versus asking the client. What is the why behind this? And identifying that before we move forward. That's hard. It's a muscle memory piece. It is taking extra time. But we just talked about judging a client's wallet. We often judge how they treat animals too without knowing the why behind it.
So true. It's an amygdala hijack, right? You have to stop that natural reaction that you have. Take a second. And I think in general, if you live by what's the why, you can really slow yourself down. And so I love that being your tip in terms of just still getting to the why, what's important to them, or why are they coming off to you in this way? Because sometimes you can find there's a lot of different reasons. And I think they'll be appreciative when you find them and they feel connected with you for better understanding. Clients, I think, are set up to feel shamed and judged when they come into the clinic. I think about so many times when clients have like washed their dogs after they've been like hit by a car because they're like, oh, they were filthy.
Yeah.
I was embarrassed to bring them in, or they have like terrible diarrhea and roll in it. And they're like, oh, I washed them, or they're having a seizure and they're washing them. I'm like, that's not necessary. But they, you know, they have their own feelings about things too, right?
So absolutely. We
have to find out what that is.
You know, Becky, I just want to share an experience I had in the hospital with a client, because I was in the same situation where I was really upset with this client for the way I felt like he hated this dog that he was bringing in. And he didn't care about what the treatment was. This dog is alive just for his wife. And he was frustrated and angry, and he was just going to do whatever. I think there was definitely a lot going on in their personal household. But as far as it came to the pet, it was a little dog that peed and pooped in the house that they could never catch. He hated this dog for peeing and pooping in the house. And he was the one that always had to clean it up. So he had no empathy towards this pet. Well, we know how those little dogs are. They can be difficult to train if we can't catch them in the act. And sometimes they're so small, we can't catch them in the act. That was his frustration. So when we dealt with that frustration and walked through ways of being able to help take care of that issue, his empathy opened completely up. But had I not taken that opportunity to explore why he, quote unquote, hated this dog, I would have never fixed that human-animal bond.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. And that's important. So take that story. I think we all have one of those, right?
We
and
do.
If you think about, and I, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm like, if Chick-fil-A can do it, we can do it, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So you know how this goes. You've gotten me to my Keep It Brief segment, where you don't actually have to keep it brief because we never do. But, you know, I know that this is a personal journey for individuals that are ready and want to be there. And we talk so much about burnout and compassion fatigue. How do we keep our team on a positive path and get them to put empathy first if they're not really in the same space to be exploring it?
And I think there's two pieces to this, Becky. One is that as a leader in a hospital, it is our job to keep our team on that positive path. But we also have team member responsibilities. What can I do to keep myself positive? So as I think about being a leader, is identifying what pieces is our team struggling with? Is it the clients, and how do we overcome those situations? How can we make the jobs easier? What can we do to improve communication and education to those clients so that we can use empathy all the time in all of our pieces? And this is going to be a leader's job, is to keep that behavioral purpose moving forward, always asking the clients how they feel, what are their hurdles, having a two-way communication piece. The second part of that is, as a team member, let's evaluate our own verbal and nonverbal skills. How can we get better at that? How can we put empathy in on that? And I will tell you, one of the most valuable pieces that I have taken from any training is to do a self-evaluation of what you look like on video and what you sound like on the phone. You think you do great at that, but when you see yourself, you will realize that you have so much potential to improve. As a leader, I can't tell you when you have been rude or when you're short or when you didn't give a client an opportunity to have a two-way conversation. But when you see yourself in that motion, you will make the change. So it's a two-way street here. Practice leadership's got to help keep our team boosted up and keep moving them in the right direction. And we as team members need to take some emotional responsibility to carry out that the communication and the empathy piece with our clients. Again, keeping in mind that ultimate patient care is why we're here.
That's beautiful. You're absolutely right. And we can find all kinds of ways to get there. And you heard it here from Ms. Heather Prendergast. She is leading leading in how to lead practices and people. She is a consultant. She is an educator. She is a writer, and she is a friend. So thank you, Ms. Heather, so much for being here and taking the time to really help us expand our empathy muscles.
Thank you, Becky. I think this is always an area we can work on. And even though I talk about this, it's always an area I consistently work on as well. We can all get better at it.
Thank you again, Ms. Heather, and thank you to today's sponsor. This episode has been brought to you by Claro. Thanks again to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can listen to podcasts as well on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. You can find us at facebook.com/cliniciansbrief, on Twitter at cliniciansbrief, and on Instagram at clinicians.brief. You can also drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief, the podcast, is a Brief Media production, produced by Alexis Ustry, sound by Randall Stupka, hosted by me, Becky Mosser, with special thanks to production assistant Michelle Moncrez.